Hello, everybody. Welcome to our November Platinum Group Coaching Call. It's great to be here with you guys. We had no pre-submitted questions. However, to kick things off, I wanted to address a couple of questions that have come up in two of my coaching groups, because I think they're excellent questions that speak to some issues that many of us deal with. One is a very practical thing, and one is kind of a mindset thing. So I had someone in my one of my groups, and this is one of my advanced group. He's an excellent white paper and case study writer. That's really what he focuses on. He'll do some other things, but it's kind of along those lines. It's content marketing, and it's kind of B2B. It's a lot of tech clients, and he's done really well for himself. But he recently had a prospect approach him about doing some email marketing and some social media posts and some other stuff that's really outside of his comfort zone. And it's not that he didn't want to do it. That's just not something he's got a lot of experience with. However, business was a little slow. He'd lost a client, and he wanted to explore it. So he did a test project with them, and he did an email series for them. And I believe it was an autoresponder series. Now, granted, I don't know exactly what the topic is, but I'm pretty sure it's still within his target market. So it's still kind of, it's either tech or something along those lines. And the client loved it. And they went ahead and paid him for that. And they approached him about doing a hiring on a retainer basis, a significant retainer. And because he had recently lost a couple of clients, he went ahead and said yes, he took it. But he's now nervous. Now, we've all been there, right? It's like you do it and you say yes. You got that fear, but you also have the fear of low cash flow. So you take it, and now the client accepts it. Everything's signed and sealed, and now you wonder, what have I done? Okay, so that's kind of where he was. And he had a couple of questions. He said, one of them was, this is outside of my comfort zone. How do I get my skill sets up in this area? And then the other one was, am I making a mistake here? So let me address the second question first. And that is, am I making a mistake here? What I would say is, look, we as freelancers, one of the beautiful things is we get to decide what we do, what we work on, how we grow. One of the areas that I see a lot of people not doing is just kind of stepping outside their comfort zone and exploring different areas and trying different approaches, going after different clients within their target market, but doing work that's not necessarily right up their alley. It's maybe slightly outside their wheelhouse. My comment was, it's good to grow. It's good to step out of your comfort zone. When you do that, you expand that area. You expand your comfort zone, and you'll only get better. I mean, you have more marketable skills now. Due to the size of this retainer, you're going to learn a lot, I told him. You're going to learn so much that you now have something else you could put up there. And who knows? You might figure out that after 3 months, you're going to continue doing the retainer, but you don't really want any more of this work outside of this client. That's fine, but you wouldn't have known unless you tried. Okay, so that's one thing. The second thing is you might find, on the other side, that you actually love the variety. You love doing the white papers and the case studies, but this breaks up your week and adds a little bit of diversity to your work. You never know. So I will tell you that most of what I kind of the big changes in pivots that I've had in my career have been because I did something like that. I went ahead and said yes for whatever reason. Maybe I really needed the money, or maybe I just thought, I'm scared, but this sounds kind of exciting. And I tried it and ended up changing my world. So you won't grow unless you take some risk and some calculated risk. I'm not saying careless, but you have to take some risk. In terms of his skill set, I said that's actually the easiest thing. First of all, they trust you. You've already done this project for them. They loved it. And it's obviously a combination of not just what you delivered, but also working with you. Don't ever question a client's decision-making process or how they went about that decision to hire you. They, you know, clients are not stupid, and they saw something in you that they liked, and they have enough confidence to, gosh, in this case, not just a project, but a retainer agreement, a sizable retainer agreement. So you should use that instead as a vote of confidence, the fact that they're willing to place that kind of trust in you and make that investment in working with you. So that would be the first thing. And second, there are so many resources out there on how to get the stuff done. But the first thing I would do is just ask them for, you know, anything they can send you to help you understand what they're looking for, what style, what tone, all kinds of examples, what things don't they like. Competitors and examples of what they like their competitors are doing, what they don't like, and so forth. So I think that's a great start. And then there's so many resources out there on how to improve your skills in that area. And so many of them free, and of course there's paid, but I would say that that's, if you start with what they have and what they give you and get direction from them, that's going to get you going for sure. And then you can always optimize from there. So that's the first thing that had come up. The second thing was really more of a practical issue, kind of a tech thing. So I have a coaching client, I just saw this. Her website went down this morning, and she has no idea why. She's trying to get help from the web host, but they have that you can't talk to a human, so you got to submit a ticket. So she's really frustrated because not only is her site down, but her email is also down. And it's not a good day for that to happen. She's waiting on a couple of emails from some clients. And what I suggested to her was that one of the best things I did from a tech standpoint a few years ago was to separate my web hosting from my email hosting. So most of us have our email tied to our web host. Our web host just does the email hosting for us. And what I did is I just separated the two because they were doing such a horrible job. And most web hosting companies, what I've learned, is do a really, really bad job of that. They don't want to do web hosting, but they go ahead and offer it because they know they have to. But it's really, really bad service. And so there's that. And I was getting spam like crazy because my email address has been out there and available for so long. 80% of my emails were spam, and the filters weren't catching them. The second reason is if your website were to go down, you now have the ability, your email doesn't go down because that's being hosted elsewhere. Okay. And I went with G Suite. I've been so impressed. This is a Google service. It's only $5 a month for hosting an email account, and it is so, so worth it. It is world-class email hosting, fantastic. The spam filtering was really my main motivation, and it's fantastic. I rarely see any spam in my inbox, and if my site were to go down, I still have email. Okay, so just a quick practical tip for you guys that could save you. All right, so let's get to Q&A, and if you have a question, let me know by typing it into the chat area, just to type in a question there. Type in capital Q in front of it if you want to. That way I can see that it is a question. And let's see, we got one from Kimberly. Hey, Kimberly. All right, she says, I have an opportunity to price a new type of project. Part of it is strategy and content planning. And they also want to know about regular blogging and a possible email sequence. How do you price for something that has both one-time deliverables in monthly? Do you separate them? Is there a way to structure you can think of where it's one option? I usually offer tiered pricing, low, medium, and high based on their budget. I'm not sure how to organize it so it makes sense. It doesn't take me forever to write up. Yeah, great question. Let me bring you in so we can chat. Hey, how's it going? Kimberly, can you hear me?
Hi, can you hear me?
Hey, yeah, okay, you're in. Good to talk to you.
Good to speak to you. How are you today?
Doing well. Doing well. This sounds like a fun opportunity. So there is the one-time deliverables are, I'm assuming, the strategy and the planning. right?
Right. So we've been talking about like an automated email sequence. So it's a set number of emails that would be a one-time deliverable they can use again and again, obviously. And also kind of creating like a content strategy and calendar, because they don't have anything yet. And they, you know, when I first spoke to them, I was like, well, instead of just saying, oh, I want to start blogging, you really need to have a plan in place first. Because if you just say, I'm just going to start writing on random topics, it's not going to be connected and it's not going to be very useful for you.
Mm-hmm.
So they mentioned they're interested in all three, but they wanted to know my rates. And I was like, well, you know, it depends on what their budget is and it depends on what they're looking for in terms of how long they want to do this. Because, for example, in my experience, I have now realized that if you're going to offer blogging, you have to have at least a 3-month commitment from someone, because it's not going to make a difference if they just say, oh, I want to do it as it comes up, because it's not going to be useful. So that's at least 3 months, but the others could be longer or shorter, or, you know, a one-time deal. So I'm trying to figure out how to create three different options in which, but it would be like a monthly rate, I would think.
So there's several ways you could tackle this. I'm gonna suggest one, rather than say, hey, you could do this, or you could do this, or you could do this. This is how I would approach it. I would do one commitment at a time. So I would do the strategy and planning engagement as a first, as our first option, right? As the first thing we do. I would price that separately, and I would position as, look, why don't we do this first, okay? And you could present it in a way that sounds like, look, let's do this. Is this a new client, or is this an existing client?
New client.
Okay, perfect. Let's do this. I think I can give you a lot of value there, and then that's going to maybe help shape and refine the scope of work for ongoing, but let's take it one step at a time. Why don't we work on this first? The way that you could present it is kind of as a favor. Listen, I don't want to, you know, try to sell you a bunch of stuff. Why don't we do this first, this thing first? And I can add a ton of value. You're going to get a lot out of it. And then we can make sure we're a good fit. And if so, then let's, at that point, I think we're going to have a clear understanding of the ongoing stuff. And then I can give you a proposal for that. That's the way I would do it. Because here's the thing, if you start throwing too much at them, there's a lot of risk in terms of you're throwing a lot of things at them and they haven't seen the value yet. The other thing is, it could be so many options that they, analysis paralysis kind of takes hold.
Yeah, that was kind of my worry, was the analysis paralysis.
yeah. And look, they still have to do the strategy and planning. I mean, like from a planning standpoint, at least an editorial calendar, you know?
Right.
So they got to do that anyway. So why don't we tackle that first, you know? And so there's that. For them, it was going to make a lot of sense because that's lower risk. Let's do this thing first, and then we can figure this other thing. Plus, you're keeping the commitment and the decision down to something really manageable, something that's very tangible and easy to see, as opposed to this, and then this other thing, and there's this recurring thing. The other thing from a sales standpoint that you'll benefit from is that working with you through this strategy and planning phase will position you as the obvious choice for the execution piece, which will be the recurring stuff. You know what I'm saying? So that one, you have a much higher probability of getting the recurring piece if you do the strategy and planning first. If you can get them focused on that, get them to say yes on it, then you become the obvious choice.
Okay. Because I know that they were wanting to know about SEO and keywords and all these different things. And I was like, well, you kind of need to know that before I can even think about tackling the other things that you want to talk about, because they're all incorporated. So creating that strategy kind of says, okay, here, we'll have that created for you. You'll know what's going to happen for the next 6 months. And, oh, hey, by the way, I've already done the research, so here's some great ideas for your topics, type thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of like, think about it in everyday life. Like if, a landscape designer. So let's say a landscaping company, if you, like if you brought them in and you know they you got a quote for the design work and the installation, that's a lot. And the number is probably going to be really big and you're going to get scared. But if you bring them in, if you just hire them, if they do this and they say, okay, great, yeah, you know, we'd love your business, but why don't we start with a design piece? Let's see what we can do. And then let's just take it from there. Great, let's start with that. And you start with that and let's just say the design, I don't know, I'm just throwing a number, it's $1,000. And you're working with them through that process because there's a lot of back and forth. And then it's great. And then you love it and you have the vision and you see it and you see the drawings. And now it's, okay, how do we do this? How do we know what's our next step? How do we, can you talk about installation? And then they give you a quote. The probability of you hiring them for the installation is extremely high, as opposed to shopping it around.
Okay. And then as a follow-up, I've never actually created a strategy document before. I really wished some of my clients had one, so I kind of know exactly what I would be looking for as the writer to create these pieces. But are there any resources you know of that I could look at to figure out exactly what the deliverable would look like?
A strategy document. I don't know of any specific resources out there. When I've been in this situation, what I do is just I go to Google and I just start searching, you know, and see what I can come up with. I'm really good at cobbling together a bunch of random ideas from different places because I never find the right thing, you know, like I never find one that goes that I go, oh my gosh, that's perfect. That's what I need, you know, let me buy that. It's always like, I like the introduction to this one, but I don't like anything else. And this one, I like the way they did this table. You know, so I'm going to take some of these ideas in that kind of thing. The one thing that where I have seen some great stuff has been, actually I've learned it from Gordon Graham, the white paper guy, on the planning side, not on the strategy. So he's got a white paper plan that's just awesome. And that's where I learned the planning piece. But it's, I guess it's a combination of both, but it's mostly planning, not so much strategy.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I think mostly the strategy portion is going to be just kind of figuring out exactly how they want to plan it out for the first few months to like get started. So I've done that like in calls before. I just haven't written anything. So.
Yeah. So this is the hard one is going to be the first one, right? So just ask yourself, okay, what, don't try to organize it right off the bat. Brainstorm first. Okay, what elements would I want in that document? I like using a mind map for that because it frees me to think out of order. And I just put it all down on paper. And then I start organizing pieces. And it's funny, once I start working with a client, that's, you know, I thought I had this kind of template and most of that still works. But then I start adding new ideas that I hadn't thought of before because now that I'm actually working on one, then that's when it becomes real, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. Yeah, I kind of have the elements floating around in my head, but I need to get them on paper to figure that out, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, and the cool thing, Kim, is that now you'll have that, and guess what? Now you've done the heavy lifting, so you can do this again. You can offer it again. And yeah, that's like 90% of it. You'll still add and refine on the next one, but you'll have most of it created.
Yeah, I've done that for a few different types of projects that have been really big, like site audits. Every time I do one, I tweak the template, and then they get a lot faster.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Perfect. Well, good luck.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You are welcome. All right. Good stuff, guys. So if you have a question, you need feedback on anything, you are struggling with something you like to discuss, just let me know in the chat area. You can give me all the detail there if you want, or you can just tell me you have a question and then I can bring you in, unmute you, and we can have a conversation. See, we got Leslie. Welcome, Leslie. Good to see you here. Got to chat with you in person last month. And of course, Kim, Mr. Hagel, good to see you. It's been a while. Hey, how's it going? Yeah. How's business? I haven't heard from you in a while. How are things cooking? Let me know. And happy to have a chat if you'd like me to bring you in. Simmering at the moment. Well, how can we change that? All right. I have myself tied up in a not-for-profit. Yeah. All right. So let me know if you'd like to talk about that. Happy to have a conversation, my friend. All right. Leslie has a question here. How do I get more work out of existing clients? I would like to write more extensive case studies or white papers. Okay, let me bring you in, Leslie. Leslie, how are you?
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, all good right, talking great. To you.
Good. Yeah, so I've been writing kind of small case studies for an engineering firm and also doing guest blogs for a company. And I'd like to, like you were saying, step outside your comfort zone or just, you know, expand what I'm doing for them. And I've said, hey, I can do, you know, I can do more. But I guess I'm not getting anywhere. So is it specific topics or?
Yeah. Well, when you bring it up, is it been that kind of flavor? Is the, hey, I can do more for you, let me know. Something along those lines?
Yeah, kind of. Like with one, well, the guy where I write the blogs, my marketing contact has left, so now I deal directly with the CEO, which is nice, but he's got, you know, he doesn't have much time for me, I think, or much time for marketing right now. But so there's that case, and then the other one, I have written a guest blog for this engineering company where I do the smaller case studies. They have a very large marketing department throughout the country, but, you know, I help them out on doing these case studies for their website. So it's just advice on what should my approach be to get more, you know, different kinds of work or more extensive work.
It's a great question. And really, this is an issue of, you know, how can you, is there a standard approach you can apply to clients everywhere, really, right? Because it's, you don't just want this now, is okay, going forward, what's going to be my strategy when I work with a new client? And right. I always like getting in the door with something, proving myself with one or two projects with that person, and then going deeper. Okay. So one step at a time. You're obviously there because they already trust you. You've already been doing work. It all starts, I found that you have to give people something specific. And I learned this, I've learned it from a few different places, but I'll tell you where it really started hitting home. They're not that local. They're actually in town. I have to drive 45 minutes to get there, but I buy a lot of my wine every year from this little store, near downtown Atlanta. And I drive 45, 50 minutes each way to go there because they are so good at what they do. They have it's a small store, but it's a very strategic assortment of products, and they are truly passionate about what they do, which is rare these days. One of the things they do that I think it's brilliant is about twice a week, they send out an email, and instead of saying, hey, we're having a sale, and doing kind of like a whole list of, you know, wines that are on sale or just advertising a sale period, which is what most people do. And just bear with me. There's a point to this. They take one wine from their inventory and they just bring it to the surface and they highlight that wine in that email. That's the only wine they talk about. And they'll say, I want to let you know about this amazing gem that we have here. Let me tell you a little bit about the history. Let me tell you why we're in love with it and, how it's made. And they really make it come alive because I can see one on a shelf, but guess what? There's about 400 of them next to it. But if you suddenly pull that off the shelf and you give me the backstory and you tell me more about it, you tell me why you love it, I'm suddenly very intrigued. In a wine that I would have maybe walked right past, now I want, you know, maybe three bottles. And that is their marketing strategy. Twice a week, they pick a wine and they tell that story. And guess what? They sell a ton of it. So my point, going back to what we're doing, is it doesn't work if you tell a client, and I'm not saying these are your exact words, hey, I'd love to do more with you. Let me know. It's much better if you can point to something. Mm-hmm. Hey, I notice you got a couple of case studies on your site. Let's just say this is somebody you're doing blog posts for. I actually write quite a few case studies. They're very powerful pieces, and they showcase how your clients have used your services successfully. Have you considered, you know, writing a few of these? You point to something specifically, and okay. You focus on that. Are there other things you could do? Absolutely. But it's much more effective if you point out one at a time than even two. Like, forget, don't even add another one. Just restrict yourself to one. And if you don't get a response, or if they don't really, if they're not really that excited, then wait. And maybe a month later or 2 months later, you bring up something else. Okay.
Okay. All right.
So that would be the first thing. The second thing is, with this works better with larger marketing departments, ask to be introduced to another marketing manager or another marketing director from maybe a different division, from their sister company. And the way I do that is I typically wait until I get some kind of positive comment. You know, let's just say they just reviewed my first draft on this article, and it's like, hey, this is fantastic, Leslie. Thank you so much. You make my job so much easier. And then I reply, oh, so great to hear it. Thanks for the feedback. It means the world to me. Hey, I've been meaning to ask you. I know, you know, that you have counterparts in, you know, your ABC division. I am looking right now to expand my client base. I have room for one more client. And rather than going elsewhere, I'd love to do more with ABC Engineering. You know, would you mind making a quick introduction? And I can assure you that, by the way, you know, like, I'm not going to get so busy that we can't do work together. So I always throw in that whole bit. Hey, don't, you know, there's no risk in you sending me over there, and then I suddenly don't want to do any work for you because I'm too busy with Susan over there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, those
That's another one.
Those are two good comments, being more specific and seeing if I can expand getting to know more people in the company.
Yes, absolutely. So just do one at a time, and pick the one you think might be the best bet. And one other thing, just be careful not to make them sound like they don't know what they're doing. And I know you wouldn't, but one of the risks is when you do it is it could come across as like, hey, you're not doing this. You really should be doing that. I mean, what's wrong with you? You know, so yeah. Make sure that it never comes across that way.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck. Okay. All right. Kimberly had, she had some feedback. Kim, I'd love for you to share what you have. I'm going to unmute you here. So I'll let you explain what you're doing with LinkedIn.
Okay. Hello, everyone. So when I talked to you last month at the boot camp event, I mentioned that I was getting some really good results just in building my network on LinkedIn. And I was a bit surprised at how effective it was. And that was because I was contacting people I hadn't spoken to in years. Or I was contacting people I had never actually messaged after connecting with. So what I've been doing is I realized that, you know, finding new people to contact and finding the email addresses and the right companies and to make sure they're a right fit, it takes a lot of time. But I already had a network of like 650 people on LinkedIn who had said yes to connecting with me. So I decided to reach out to them and just to see how communicative they would be. How if I sent them a message, would I get an answer? And then from there, I have kind of laid out a strategy for building to maybe getting work. Because I've noticed that to convert people, it's about 12 to 18 months currently. And so some of these people I've known for longer than that, and some of them it's less, but It's a whole network that I have that I hadn't really been nurturing, if you will. So back in June, I started reaching out, just doing 5 people a day, sending a quick message, starting with my oldest connections, saying, hello, it's been a while since we connected on the platform. How's business going for you? And I've been doing that every day. It takes less than 30 minutes. It doesn't take very long. And it's not like I have to think of what I'm going to say, because for the most part, I just use 2 or 3 different templates. Sometimes I mention if we're in a group together or something, or how we met. But it doesn't, you know, I have a template. It's really fast. I send the message. And then if they answer me, then I start talking with them. And I've had about a 21% response rate so far. So I've contacted over 400 people. Which to me, it's like, wow, that's a huge number. But when you only do 5 a day, it builds fast and you don't really realize it. But it's fairly simple. And I've gotten responses back and actually started conversations with quite a few people. I've got a strategy call set up with one person. Another person, I did a quick call for like their personal branding, and they joined my newsletter, even though they're not in my industry, because they want to be able to refer people to me in the future because they really liked what I helped them with. And I've had a couple other people say, you know, in the new year, they're looking for someone like me and to keep in touch with them because they are going to need that kind of help. And these are people, especially like the strategy call I have set up, I hadn't spoken with them in like 3 years, or I literally had never sent them a message. And I'm getting quite a high response rate for people who have just kind of been a name on a list.
That is fantastic. I love that. But I mean, I think one 2 key points that I wanted to highlight is the power of small, daily, consistent actions, right? 5 a day adds up over a course of 2-3 months. And look at that, 400 and with a 21% response rate. And response rate means you're able to get a response and maybe try to start a conversation.
Right. So the 21% is people who responded to my message and then I started a conversation with. Some people, you know, they responded to my message and then, you know, I messaged them back, of course, responding to theirs, and it like became a sales pitch. So that's also good for me to know, to realize, to not necessarily invest time in that if they're trying to sell me on their vitamin water or something and they don't know me.
Yeah.
But it's been really useful because now I've spoken with these people. They've actually had a conversation with me. And my next step is I'm going to continue to do this outreach. My network is about 690 right now, and I'm at 417 because I've been keeping a spreadsheet, which has kind of been the hardest part, honestly. But my next step is to send them a resource, and then I can go and look at their connections and see who they know. And now that they know me, they've actually spoken with me, I can ask for introductions to people who can hire me.
I love that. Love, love, love that. So I think of this LinkedIn as concentric circles, right? At the inner circle is these are people who know you well, right? And you have a real relationship with, even outside of LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And that's a low hanging fruit, right? What you're talking about is the concentric circle outside of that one, which is, all right, you're connected to them on LinkedIn, but it's either been a long time since you've corresponded or you never have. You connected with them, whether they sent you the request or you sent them the request and you just accepted it, and right? And that is your next best shot. The third circle on the outer ring is you're reaching out cold, right? And hoping to strike up a conversation. By just, hey, you know, writing a personal note. And that's the part that so many people miss, is they're sending out connection requests left and right, but they're not taking the time to personalize it, which makes a huge difference. So what I'm hearing is you've really focused on that middle circle, and that's paid off for you so far. Well, I think it sounds very promising.
Yes, definitely. And also, you know, with LinkedIn, when it got bought, it became really difficult to do a lot of active outreach, I guess you could say, like cold prospecting on LinkedIn, because you're limited in the number of searches. And I think I was trying to find people I might want to connect with. And I did like 5 searches, and suddenly I'd reached my limit for the month. And it was like the second day or something. So this is one way to use the network and kind of slowly build out those connections. Because if you're talking to second connections, and that's people who know someone you're connected with, or it's people you're in a group with, that does not necessarily count against your search if you are connecting with them from their list of connections. So yeah. It's another way for you to expand who you can reach out to without, you know, paying for the full premium membership, because I don't use LinkedIn enough to need the premium membership for every month.
Love it. I love that. This is great, Kimberly. Thank you for sharing that with us. You've been very resourceful, and I love the fact that it's just baby steps, right? Every day, less than 30 minutes a day. People tell me, "Oh, I don't have time." I got all this work, or I just, you know, all this stuff happening, and I just don't have time. I mean, if you were to just block out 30 minutes a day, I think we can all find 30 minutes, really, right? And especially if you put it in first thing as your first task of the morning, it will get done if you make a commitment to doing this. So I love it. And who's, you know, here's the thing that I love about, the reason I think it works so well is who's doing that? Like very, very few people. I'm in LinkedIn about once a week, and I don't get messages like that. It's always this long pitch or some generic thing, or I rarely get a message like that. So they stand out.
They do stand out. And as you do it more often, it becomes faster. So at the beginning, I toyed with a bunch of different templates and how to send the messages and when I would send the messages. And I looked at, okay, is there a day that's better to send messages so that I could not be doing it every day? But once you figure out the system that works best for you, I started with 30 minutes a day. I think now it takes me like 15 or 20. And that's a really short amount of time. It can be one of those things where it's like, oh, it's near the end of the day. I have 20 minutes left before I need to like go leave and do something. Great. I can do my LinkedIn and be done with it. It's a really small commitment, because what I found was I would try and do like these huge outreach campaigns. Oh, I'm going to contact 300 companies in a month or something. And because it was such an overwhelming number, I would never actually want to do it.
Yeah, of course.
But doing it small bits at a time makes a difference.
Have you heard this research that's been done on what I think the term is loose connections as opposed to strong connections in your networks?
No.
All right, so this is fascinating, and it speaks to what you're doing. A lot of people won't do what you're talking about because it's not intuitive. They think, well, so many of these connections are really outside of my target market for whatever reason. You know, just I was accepting requests, or I was connecting with people, and I've changed target markets, or, you know, that was from back when I was employed, and now I'm freelancing, whatever. And so the bottom line is the research shows that, of course, if you have connections in your target market, especially if they're in a marketing department, those are going to be solid. And that's why I call those golden nuggets. However, many of us discount the value of loose connections, I think is the term they use, which are, they're outside of our market, they're outside of our profession or what we do, and or their old contact, like somebody went to college with, somebody you haven't talked to in 10 years, but used to know them back, you know, back in the day. And these are the people we tend to avoid. In the point of the research, what they uncovered was that we typically don't tap that part of our network, but those tend to be some of the most valuable when people do tap them, because they run in circles, they work in circles that are outside of our immediate circle, and they may have contacts and insights and opportunities that you normally wouldn't have access to. So the bottom line is you just never know. You need to treat them just like you would anybody else. Sure, start with your best bets. Start with your golden nuggets. But don't say, you know, Bill, I mean, he's like in this totally different industry. He's in tech, and like, you know, my target market is, I don't know, financial services, or you never know. Reach out anyway, because there's a decent probability that something could come out. And it's usually not going to be him. It's going to be a referral or an introduction. That was the whole point. So, and that's what you're doing speaks to that.
Yeah. And I mean, what's interesting is when I'm going back through all of these names, I don't remember how I connected with like 80% of them. I don't recognize their names. I don't recognize their positions. I have to look into their job history to figure out why exactly I connected with them in the first place. But as you said, you never know how people's lives are going to change in the future as well. Like one of the people I connected with, when I first connected, they weren't going to be someone who could actually hire me. They were like a manager at a restaurant or something. But now they're opening their own hotel, and I have the opportunity to do consulting on how to do their launch marketing. And that's a huge opportunity. That's the consulting call I have set up.
And for those who are listening wondering what does that matter, your target market is hospitality.
Hospitality and travel, yeah.
Travel, yeah. So there you go. You just never know. Or the person you thought, well, that's not really – well, guess what? Their sister is, you know, works in marketing at this boutique hotel chain in the West Coast. Like, you know, who knew? Stranger things have happened. So I love it. So thanks for that, Kimberly. This is that's great feedback. Keep that up.
Thank you. You know, all the stuff about LinkedIn, I kept seeing all these articles on how people were using LinkedIn, and I was like, okay, I have to start using this somehow. How can I do it? That's really easy to get into.
Love it. Well, thanks again. Great stuff. All right, guys. I don't see any other questions, so I'll just do a last call. No hurry on my end, but I want to make sure I don't miss anybody. If you have a question, an issue you'd like to discuss, need feedback, let me know. I'm here for you. Just let me know in the chat box, and I can bring you in. Good stuff, Herb. Yeah, next time, no problem. I'll be here. Same bat channel, same time. All right, guys, I don't see anything else, so we'll go ahead and wrap up. And just a reminder, we'll have this posted in the Academy dashboard under Platinum Calls. So if you want to go back and listen to some of this, especially Kimberly's awesome feedback on what she's doing, and go back and take some more notes, the replay will be posted by tomorrow afternoon, and we'll send out an email when that's available. But you guys have a great rest of the day. Great to reconnect, and I'll talk with you again real soon. Take care, everybody.